Do you remember a time when elves couldn't take classes? Well, System Mastery remembers.
We remember a special time way back yonder when players woke up early to start earning their fun.
Why, even today, I can still see the thieves of yesteryear looking down at their tattered character sheets, seeing a 10% chance to pick a lock, and they were happy to get it.
At System Mastery, we cherish the days of starting over at level 1 after dying, when a man couldn't shout another man's arm back on, and a healing surge was just a warm breeze on the porch.
Here at System Mastery, we like our games the way you remember them. Our orcs are evil, our paladins are fallen, and our wizards are quadratic.
Every season, we raise a fresh herd of whiny little brothers to play your healers and highlings. Will they drink your surge? Well, yes they will, but that's the way it should be.
We here at System Mastery know that it's not enough to serve your foes a polearm. That's why we specialize. Every morning we roll out a fresh crop of glaive geese arms, bectacore bands, lucerne hammers, tridents, and lockerbur axes. That's Granny's favorite, to match every taste.
So join us, won't you? Come with us to a simpler time when you could kill a man with an alignment test, and the weeaboo fighting magic was still just called magic, the way God and country intended. System Mastery, where cotton into the newfangled D10 is still a hanging offense.
Get a rope.
Afterthought, the companion podcast to System Mastery, where every other week we get together and discuss topics of interest to the day, and to you, and to us, mostly to us.
Yeah, I can't really see why you would care, but we usually do.
Yeah, no, this is great for me. It's one of my favorite parts of the week.
Yeah.
The every other week, even.
It's the best part of every week. Is either doing this or thinking about doing this.
That's my favorite part of next week. I've already decided.
My favorite part of recording System Mastery is thinking about what I'm going to talk about on Afterthought.
I mean, admittedly, my favorite part of last week was receiving my calculator watch.
Oh my god, you are the worst.
I have a calculator watch. I don't see how that makes me the worst. I think it makes me prepared.
Yes, prepared in case, I don't know, you lose your phone?
In case 1996 starts over?
Yeah, in case you get some weird Groundhog's Day action, but you get sent back in time only, and have to relive one day where you don't have access to a calculator.
Except I'm really good at math and remembering phone numbers. It's purely jewelry. It is just jewelry to look like I'm from 1995. That's all I care about.
Yeah, good. I'm glad.
So there you go. Anyway, what did we talk about last week?
Last week, we had Dinosaur Planet Bronchosaurus Rex.
Oh, that's right. It was a game that promised to be about interesting dinosaurs and cool cowboys riding dinosaurs and so on, but was actually about the Confederacy.
Yep. It was 100% just, did you know that the Confederacy was actually just wonderful people? Top to bottom, everyone cared.
Hitler did nothing wrong.
Hey, you guys. Did you know that nothing ever bad happened in the South?
Well, one of my favorite things about it was the part where Robert E. Lee frees the slaves, acting on his own volition as the new president of the Confederacy, because it's the right thing to do. Except that according to the Confederacy, that's just illegal. It was illegal in their initial charters to do any laws at all that had to do with abridging slavery.
No, it's straight up just, he would have gone, hey, I'm going to do this. And they go, well, one, no, you don't have the power to do that. And two, you're impeached. Get out.
Yeah. I mean, granted, lots of presidents get impeached and don't get kicked out. That doesn't mean kick out. It just means get mad.
No, it's, yeah. You've been impeached. Also get out.
Yeah, it would have to be both.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, I feel like alternate histories are something that we don't see enough of in game design. I mean, we see a lot of it, but it's only because a lot of games that we know of are super old and they have now come past the year where they were set.
Oh, yeah. We've definitely passed the timeline where the rifts were supposed to erupt in rifts. We've passed the point where the reawakening of all the races happen in Shadowrun.
Yeah.
We've passed the point where the Herculoids are supposed to be here.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true. We've also passed the point of when Gamma World was supposed to erupt into existence.
Yeah.
Because the earlier books actually had a year for it. The 7th edition one does not, but the earlier Gamma Worlds were all like, yeah, it was the in 1997, the collapse of the world government will occur.
Yeah. You see that a lot in the old ones, like Car Wars had that. All of the ones that are just like, oh, in the great and distant future of 1999. You're like, okay, great.
There will come a massive collapse and calculator watches will become unavailable.
Oh no, truly the most dire of futures.
I can't imagine living in one.
So a lot of the times you end up getting this sort of revisionist history of, oh yeah, well, in this world, that's what happened in 1999.
Yeah.
It just split from our world in that year. But then you get ones like the Bronchosaurus Rex and a few others where it's straight up just, no, the premise of this is either modern day or the future, but things from the past have turned out differently.
Right. I always find it amusing when we talk about these speculative history fiction things where it's like, well, what if this one thing had been different? That the first thing that happens is we went to war and stayed there, and that's how the technology is super awesome. And everyone invented hovering equipment. That usually seems to be the very first thing that happens in alternate history stuff, is everyone starts inventing hover technology and monoblades.
Well, the other issue I have with it is you change one thing, and it's, oh, and now, like, we're stuck in a permanent place where there's the Confederacy, or there's Nazis, or there's whatever. But it always stays stuck at whatever that year was.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if it's 400 years later, we're still going to be running around in, like, gray Civil War uniforms on another planet, or we're going to be fighting Nazis and the Nazis look exactly like they do now and nothing has changed in 300 years.
That always reminds me of my least favorite thing about Star Trek, which is whenever Picard's like, oh yes, of course, I'm a huge fan of jazz and baseball and the 1940s, but nothing that occurred in the 2100s.
Oh yeah, well, once you set your thing into like, what a year is it? It's like 2375. Okay, well, what's your favorite band? Oh, it's someone from, like, 1943.
It's definitely the Ramones, Data.
Oh, yeah, Picard huge into the Ramones.
You don't know.
You can tell.
That's what he's got on under that one-piece zip-up jumpsuit.
It's why he keeps having to pull it down, because the t-shirt underneath his uniform is riding up.
Yeah, it's just getting pulled up by leg lycra or nylon or whatever the shit that thing's made out of.
He's gonna pull his top off and underneath it's just a shirt that says Nazi punks fuck off.
Yeah, he's got one of those crotch flags that you see on the super punks underneath that outfit just waiting for his chance to reveal it. He's not naturally bald.
Someone comes in and he's only got like one arm above the desk because the other one's got all of his spiked wristbands on and he can't show them.
The only reason he's bald is because they made him shave his mohawk. But that's something you never see in the Star Trek universe, is anyone going, oh yeah, I'm a huge fan of 2200s movies.
Yeah, it's, no one references anything written or done. There was like an episode of DS9 where specifically Dax goes to her homeworld,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, oh yeah, this is my favorite artist. He's from like 2250. And I went, holy shit!
Well yeah, because it's on an alien planet, so you gotta make shit up anyway. You might as well do it from a random year. You never see, they're always like, especially on DS9, they all play baseball.
Yeah.
Baseball unchanged for 400 years.
Hey, you never know. I mean, at least some of the names where they talk about it are like, oh yeah, this was some baseball team that didn't exist until like 2130. And I go, all right, sure, fine, great. But usually it's just, I like all of the things that you will know about on the modern day.
This is certainly easier to write.
Yeah.
That seems to be what it is. So, John, let's go ahead and float what our favorite alternate history scenarios are.
I like when weird shit happens, because there are ones, like, I've read a few where it was alternate histories where most of the tribes from Africa were the ones who ended up attacking and settling into Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So you had, the whole book was set in the New World, but it was the whole reverse of, like, most of the plantation owners and everything were black. And the slaves were all just Irish people that they had stolen from, like, Ireland and Britain and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was that sort of reversal and It was an interesting book.
Okay.
But more than that, I generally like when it's like, oh, what is it? Like, Harry Turtledove's Great War series, mm-hmm. where it's just straight up, oh, it's World War II, and then aliens invade. Fucking deal with it.
let's see. I'm going to say my favorite scenario is Kennedy not getting assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And because he doesn't get assassinated, Nixon doesn't rise to power as the president, and Nixon famously hated space stuff.
Huh.
He just thought it was stupid and a waste of time and money, which is why we ended up with space shuttles, because they are just buses that can get you to space. They're like space easy. As opposed to Kennedy,
all space Greyhound,
who was super into space hard. Like, he just wanted to do crazy space shit. So the alternate history idea being that if Kennedy had not been assassinated, that we would have pushed to Mars already by now.
Yeah.
Because instead of bothering with building dumb shuttle lifters that can get us into space, I guess, we would have been, like, increasingly advanced, stupid, complicated rockets, and we'd have blasted ourselves to Mars by now.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because there was a point where we just sort of went, and good enough.
Yeah, well, it's like 1972.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, that's the last time we had people on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
It's been so long, and we're still like, yeah, Americans are the only ones who have ever been on the moon. It was boring, and there's no reason to go there, and we stopped.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. But I like the alternate history that has weird shit that goes on, mostly because it's so hard to write an alternate history that isn't somehow going to offend somebody.
Oh yeah, because you always have to, you have to use the same players, is the thing. Anytime you write alternate history, you can't suddenly introduce, like, you know, Latveria and be like, have Dr. Doom show up. It's got to be France.
Yeah. And so if you want to go, oh, well, here's a book where the Civil War didn't actually end and we had the whole North and South split, but what happened with the South's economy and everything else begins to mirror what happened in Germany after World War I, so you basically turned the South into Nazis, and you're like, okay, that's actually somewhat feasible,
yeah,
as far as that goes.
Pretty offensive.
Yeah, but it's still saying, yeah, the South, fuck you, you're Nazis. And you're like, okay, well, great.
Yeah, and there's nothing I like better than making fun of the South for a while, but even I'm not going to go calling them Nazis. That's completely unnecessary.
Yeah, but I do like the whole idea of alternate history where you get the one weird thing happens.
Yeah.
You know, just one weird trick that a mother yeah. finds out.
Invented by a school teacher that the U.S. government just hates. Don't share this picture of Serena Williams. It's the one she wishes she could erase from the internet.
I'm just imagining her eating a meatball sub now. And that's it. That's the reason.
Well, she's already done Subway ads. Of course she's eating a meatball sub.
Dude, meatball subs are great.
Yeah, why would you want to erase that? I think the
actual... Oh my god, what if there's an alternate history where meatball subs aren't great?
Ooh, that's a terrible alternate history.
Oh man, it would be just a nightmare.
I don't want to live in that world. I actually think the pictures of Beyonce making a dumb face in the middle of a dance routine that was that famous picture that she wants this erased from the internet. Let's all spread it as much as we can. I don't understand. We should do a whole
the internet is dumb
of memes at some point.
Everyone on the internet, you listening right now,
stop it!
You're bad.
You know what? You know the worst. The new one, that one that's like be like this guy, the stick figures.
Oh yeah, the stick figure thing. I just love that we've gotten to a point where we have increasingly become not okay with it. Like I saw that for maybe half a day. Before, more than any more of those, I just kept seeing more parody ones that were like, stop posting the fucking stick figure, be like that guy.
Yeah. The one that I don't think will ever die is the meme of putting minions on random, like, banal shit.
Oh, it's just, so good.
Yeah, it's just, oh, I can say whatever if I put a fucking minion in the corner. Oh, you should grind up your babies for meat! Here's a minion!
Except it's never that. It's always just the most, like, completely pedestrian,
yeah.
mother meme type things. It's like, you shouldn't talk to me unless I've had my coffee.
And there's a little meme in the corner, or a little minion in the corner going like, ah, and making a big smile.
Yeah, it's just some minion who looks grumpy and has a cup of coffee, and you're like, okay, great.
I like the ones where the minion doesn't appear to have anything to do with it, and also the meme is a little more edgy, and it's things like, you shouldn't mess with a bad bitch, because a bad bitch knows how to throw her nails. And you're like, what the fuck is that? But I guess there's a minion in the corner, so I'm okay with it. All right. Thanks, Facebook.
I like to imagine someone just goes to a meme generator, types in some words, and it just gives them a picture automatically.
Half the time, the minion, it doesn't matter. All the minions are making a dumb smile or sticking their hands cheerfully in their pockets. That's all it is. Whatever. Anyway, what do you say we answer a couple of questions? There are quite a few.
So many questions. We got a lot of questions from you, and we love it.
The listener.
You, the listener, the one listener, you know who you are because you're the only one listening.
Thanks for giving us so much Patreon.
Thank you for subscribing to our Patreon under so many different names, constantly giving us different email addresses that you give us questions under.
Yeah, and thanks for building that that System Mastery Wiki that people can now obsessively research, just like Wikipedia.
Yeah.
That's good. That's great. It doesn't exist, but it should. Just get out there and make a crazy wiki for us, fan base.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're going to do.
All right, here we go. If you could, did we do this? If you could see any RPG turned into a TV series, what would you pick? What sort of TV series would it be? Drama, comedy, Saturday morning cartoon? What would be some of the main and recurring characters, as well as some memorable plot lines?
I feel like we've done this one before.
So do I. Hang on just a second.
No, I will not. I shan't, sir. I will have my satisfaction.
Very good. We're going to skip this one. I agree that we have probably answered it. So, sorry about that. Moving on. Bros, so I have a weekly D&D group where we play 5th edition. I DM. Hey, good for you. It's always good to hear from DMs.
Yeah.
You're the salt of the earth. Good people.
I love you. I could never do what you do, because every time I do, I hate it.
Or you just give up immediately. Let's see. I recently bought a bunch of 4th edition books because they are currently cheap as hell, and you guys made it sound fun. It is fun.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much from us. Now I desperately want to switch my group to 4th edition. However, I have some problems. One, 4th edition rules are way more complicated than 5th edition, and my group definitely won't sit down and read the books, so I don't know how to, like, get them to pick powers and build their characters for them and shit. Alright?
Easy enough is just, whatever they're playing right now, there is an analog in 4th edition.
Yeah, because 4th edition has more stuff than 5th edition does.
Yeah, so if someone's running around and they're like, oh, but what about me? I'm a cool guy that likes to do this thing. Like, great, you can do that.
Yeah. You just have to really quickly build their characters for them based exactly on what they're currently playing now. If they're playing a fighter, they are not going to believe how much cooler their fighter is.
And the big thing is, unlike a lot of other D&Ds, starting at level 1 isn't a terrible idea because you actually have a full suite of powers at level 1.
Yeah, you have 4 different powers that you start with instead of, you know, I can hit guys.
Yeah, so instead of just, what are you? I'm plus 1 to hit, and that's me.
Yeah. Heck, I think there's 5 powers if you count the fact that every race gets a power too.
Yeah. So you've got a whole bunch of shit you can do, and if you wanted to start at a higher level, then it gets more complicated. That's very true.
Yeah,
starting the game at, like, especially 10 or above, you start getting crazy complicated.
Yeah, there are a couple of big things you have to deal with. The transition to Paragon, and then right about the point where you start having to, instead of getting new powers, you trade them for older powers. That can be a little tricky for newer players to understand. But if you're under 10th level in your game, it's an easy one-to-one conversion over to 4th edition that you can do for your players real fast, and not only that, but it'll end up with you learning a lot more about the system.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, even just go, hey, man, first level, you've got, like, these 4 powers to pick from. Choose one of them.
Yeah, it's not that tough. I mean, granted, a starting fighter, if you have all the old 4E books, has, like, a million starting at-wills to choose from. But if you just start with the player's handbook, you'll be all right.
Yeah.
Let's see. You need a mat and miniatures to play 4E, but I am too broke to buy them and too inartistic to make them. All right, well, you know, by the second half of that, you've already eliminated our suggestions. I, of course, just bought a shitload of that stuff super cheap, because at the time period where I was playing 4E, they were discontinuing a line of D&D miniatures, like some plastic miniatures that came in cubes of you couldn't see what was in them.
Although, honestly, if you just go to your local nerd store, a lot of the times they'll have just fucking grab bags of miniatures.
The bins.
Are like, what is this? 10 cents a piece. We don't care. Just go in there, grab a whole bunch of them. If you don't care about, like, oh, well, my guy is playing a goblin cleric, so I need to have a goblin with a mace, and that, so we can represent him. If you're like, I don't care. What's this guy? It's a skeleton. You're a skeleton now. Go.
Yeah. That kind of miniature is not hard to come by. You shouldn't have too much difficulty coming up with something. You know, and then beyond that, one of the things we played with for the first couple of games that we did in 4th edition way back in the day was just discs.
Yeah.
Just 1-inch across discs that had a picture or a letter or something on them to represent who they were.
The nice thing is, if you have a printer, you can just print out grids and discs.
Yeah.
So you can just cut out the disc from the piece of paper, put your grid down, and move around that way.
Yeah, if you print out a 1-inch grid, then you can draw your map onto that and still have it be correct.
Yeah.
Those squares are all that really matters. So, it's not that tough. Third, I'd be DMing a system I've never played, which sounds hard.
Well, that's going to be hard no matter what, if you're DMing a system you've never played. But you've played D&D, which means you basically know what you're doing.
Yeah, there are a couple of tricks that you need to learn about 4th edition. The rhythm of short rests and long rests. And healing surge storage and using treating healing surges as a resource. These are all things that can be a little tricky to a new player. But luckily, the adventures that they wrote for some of the adventures anyway that they wrote for 4th edition are pretty solid.
You can find out online which ones are better than the others. Yeah, it's super easy.
I can tell you right off the bat that the first one, the keep on the Borderlands or whatever it is garbage and should definitely be avoided. But there are lots of really good ones out there. Also, the monster math in 4th edition actually makes sense, and so you can trust the monster math that's written out in the books.
Yeah, the thing we've mentioned before on the show, which is the monster on a business card, is a thing. If you just look up 4th edition monster business card, you'll get the, like, all of the stats that you need and adjustments for whatever. So it means if there's some monster you want to make them fight, and either you're looking through the books and you don't find it at the right level, or they just don't have that, you can go ahead and just make it yourself, because the math in 4th edition actually hangs together.
For the most part. I mean, right off the bat, you should probably use the house rule of giving everyone the equivalent of weapon expertise.
Yeah.
Just plus one to hit, and then another plus one to hit at levels 5 and 9, and you're fine. Anyway, let's move on with the question here. So first, as the authors of my new obsession with 4th edition, please help me with these. Good. Second, please feed my obsession further with more tales of 4th edition awesomeness. I guess we could tell them about our old big campaign characters.
Yeah, they're super rad. I had one of my actual favorite characters ever was a 4th edition character.
Mm-hmm.
And only because 4th edition let me do interesting reskinning and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But Jack?
Jack was a fey-packed warlock. So he got all of his powers from accidentally stumbling into elf land. And the King of Autumn is the one who gave him his powers.
Mm-hmm.
So he is beholden to the Fey King of Autumn.
Right, and he's sort of a charming rogue archetype. Like, he's smiling and friendly, knife hidden behind his back, though, that kind of guy.
He's a half-elf, so he's got that whole, like, good at diplomacy thing. He fits in other places, but he's also very much, like, that roguish type that he's got the darkness from being a warlock, but it's not like, oh, yeah, I'm straight up an infernal tiefling warlock that's all blah-ha-ha and hellfire.
Yeah. I played one of the things that I missed the most when they moved to 5th edition. And again, I don't hate 5th edition. I think it's kind of boring. I don't really agree with the guy who runs it, Mike Merles, and his beliefs about certain classes. Because my favorite thing in 4th edition is something that he apparently dislikes immensely. The Warlord.
Yeah.
I thought the Warlord was an amazing class. And God, do I ever hate people who think about shouting arms back on or whatever the fuck. It's just such a good idea to have a tactical battle leader class.
Yes.
So my character, back when John and I played Heavy 4th Edition, was a warlord, a dragonborn warlord named Amon.
Yep.
And the whole thing about Amon to me, the reason I liked playing her so much is because she was genuinely nice, which is a weird trait to take in a D&D game. This character was just friendly. Like, when she was trying to get information out of sea captains, she'd just start helping them heft stuff around the ship, or she never did that because of mercenary bent. She was just a nice person.
Yeah, no, the game that we had was much less murder hobo and much more, like, fun, good time adventurings.
Yeah, we were all, like, a good team of friendly people trying to help other friendly people out. It was nice. We had the two leaders were a dragonborn warlord and a goblin cleric that were buddies because they were both kind of weird species. They had determined to open up their own mercenary company called the Greenscale Mercenaries. And by the end of the game, they had a full-on, like, mercenary band. It wasn't even the party. It was like we had an army of our own.
Yeah.
So, it was just a really fun game. We had a great time playing it. The rules mostly just got out of our way. Although, I'd say one of my favorite moments in that game was using a wait action to wait until a dragon that was hiding inside of its own smoke cloud poked its head out, and then using a warlord push power to shove it out of its smoke cloud so other people could get at it.
Huh.
So, I remember having an amazing time with that sort of thing. Oh, and realizing that the warlord power opening shove, which is an at-will, which is you shove a target, like, 4 squares or whatever, and then you let one of your other party members make a basic attack. When I realized it said a target 4 squares and not an enemy 4 squares, that meant that I could throw the party halfling and then have her make an attack was a transcendent moment for me.
Yeah, it's just the joy of having a bunch of weird random interactions.
Yeah, it was just such a fun thing. Anyway, it says, thanks from Atu. So thank you, Atu. It's always fun to talk about 4E a little bit. It's been a long time since we played it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. What's your favorite or least favorite 70s cartoon annoying sidekick? Is it Scrappy-Doo, Bat-Mite, Roy Scheider from The French Connection, please share your thoughts from Scotty Dumb. I love Roy Scheider in everything. So I'm just on team Roy Scheider.
Man, when I first read that, I saw it as Rob Schneider in the French Connection. I was like, fuck, what the hell was I missing in that one?
I would have hated that.
God damn.
All right, worst 70s cartoon annoying sidekick.
I mean, it's obviously Scrappy-Doo.
Well, you're going to hate on Scrappy-Doo, so I'll take something else. That's fine. Well, tell me about Scrappy-Doo, though.
Scrappy-Doo was the worst because it was that weird sort of pandering that gets you a Jar Jar Binks. It's the people in charge going, ah, well, they like this
Cousin
thing.
Oliver on fucking...
Well, that's just, okay, they like the dog or they like Ewoks or whatever. Let's see if we can try and capture that lightning in a bottle again with something we have tried to genetically make to appeal to children. You're like, dude, you are a 55-year-old executive. You have no idea what appeals to children.
And it's not even like Scrappy-Doo was their first try. Because I don't remember if you remember Scooby-Dun.
Well, there was Scooby-Dumb.
It's technically Scooby-Dun. People call him Scooby-Dumb because he's dumb Scooby.
Yeah. And he had his cousin, and he also had a couple other ones.
His parents were the other two Scoobies that showed up from time to time. And they were horrible because they talked a lot more than Scooby did.
Yes, all of the other Scooby clan talks more than him.
Yeah. But Scooby Dunn was awful. He was like Scooby's redneck cousin.
Yeah, he was just showing me like, oh, yeah, hey there, Scooby.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, people don't even remember him because of how much they hate Scrappy-Doo.
Yeah.
But there is a worse Scooby out there that's just as annoying. Well, no, Scrappy-Doo's worse. Because Scrappy-Doo, you're right, he's the result of focus testing.
And the other problem is he just grabs the spotlight in anything he's in. And it made the show about him.
Yeah.
It was basically Urkel syndrome for Family Matters.
Hell, he made a whole second show all about him because of the fucking 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Where they decided to pull together the dream team of the best characters from the Scooby Enterprise. Shaggy, Scooby, Daphne, and Scrappy-Doo. And then add a magician named a magician's apprentice child named Flim Flam.
Yeah, I don't remember Daphne being on that show.
Daphne was definitely on the 13 Ghosts.
She may have guest starred, but I don't think she was one of the mains.
She was in the opening credits.
You know who else was in the opening credits?
Vincent Price?
D's Nuts.
Oh, okay. That ghost Vogel or Bogle or whatever the fuck? Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to say my least favorite is Godzuki.
Oh, Godzuki.
Yeah.
Oh, nice pull.
Right? Yeah. Okay, so Godzuki was Godzilla's, like, nephew or something, and in this weird show from the 70s, where a little boy rode around on a giant science boat with his scientist parents and a black guy, who I assume is also a scientist, and for some reason they had a little Godzilla on the boat. A little whiny, irritating, terrified, capable of flying Godzilla named Godzuki.
Yeah, and Godzuki was friends with the kid.
Yeah, he was the kid's buddy. He was like the kid's Scooby, except he was completely nonverbal. He just kind of expressed himself through weird noises. And every episode featured a lot of Godzuki business, which was just Godzuki sort of falling on his butt and going, rawr, and stuff like that. And then eventually they'd find a giant crab or something and they'd have to summon Godzilla to fight it. That was the episodes of Godzilla.
Oh, yeah. My favorite one was, like, the enemy, instead of being another giant monster, was just, like, pirates or something. And they're like, oh, I know what we need to stop pirates. Godzilla.
I know. It's, like, unfair at that point.
Dude, that guy has a boat, and you summoned Godzilla.
But the reason you would hate Godzuki so much, I would hate Godzuki so much, as opposed to Scrappy-Doo, is because the show was called Godzilla.
Oh, yeah.
The show is called Scooby-Doo, but I don't give a fuck about Scooby-Doo. He's a fucking talking Great Dane. Who gives a shit? He hangs around with an annoying, never-stops-eating idiot. I don't care. Godzilla, though, has some cachet. Yeah, I want to see Godzilla fuck shit up.
I hang out with an annoying idiot that won't stop eating every goddamn day, you asshole.
Oh, that was real mean.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that hurt.
Oh, man.
That hurt. But anyway, to watch a show called Godzilla and instead get his fucking, like, stand-in, tiny, dumbass, dog-smart monster friend was the worst.
Well, it was also that idea from those cartoons, like the Voltron or whatever, that you can't have something cool until the very end.
Oh, yeah. Also, that you have to have a little boy who is identifiable be your main character, and then the monster has to be his buddy.
Well, yeah, it was like what happened with the Super Friends, where you're like, oh, yeah, here's the Justice League, and they're doing stuff. Wait a minute. We need to have, like, Wendy and Martin show up, because kids can't identify with Superman. We need to give him a bumbling, dumbass idiot with an M on his t-shirt.
It's amazing to me because I know that character's name is Marvin, but when you said that, I pictured Martin Lawrence.
Oh my god.
Gonna add Wendy, Wonder Dog, and Martin.
Martin. Oh my god. If Martin Lawrence wants to join the Justice League, Please let him give him a shirt with an M on it. Just do it.
That would be perfect for me. Yeah, at that time period, you couldn't do a show and just have it be about, like, the main character. You had to add some teens with mystery-solving abilities or something. Remember when they spun Captain Caveman off into his own show and they added three human teenage girls to hang around with him?
Yeah, they kept doing it. You were not allowed to have something be a cool guy by himself.
Captain Caveman is a hair-covered thumb. He does not need teenage girls.
Yeah. No, this hairy thumb with a club does not need to hang out with, like, Josie and the Pussycats.
It didn't make sense. And they were all, like, modern girls in 70s outfits. Apparently they just moved him forward to the future instead of hanging out with, with Fred Flintstone and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go. Those are our two that we dislike. Thank you, Scotty Dumb. Next question from, Devlin the Turbo Farmer. Oh, it's our friend, our 15-year-old friend. Oh, maybe 16 by now, who knows. This is great, because he's answering a call to action. Hello, fine podcast hosts. After turning off my Great Malenko and Ringmaster albums to engage in a less shameful, albeit more nerdy pastime of listening to your podcast, please stop. Stop listening to... We don't listen...
Our podcast.
Yeah, please stop. We don't listen to Insane Clown Posse. We just enjoy their films. Which, by the way, I watched part of Big Money Hustlers the other day, the first one.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, it's worse. It's way worse. But there's a great line where... There's a great line where the main character, which again is Sugar Wolf equivalent, hanging out in a donut shop when it is robbed by a man in an ape suit. Of course, it's Violent J in the ape suit. And the first thing he says is, I'm in an ape suit! That means I don't give a fuck!
God, I love it so much. It's like they're saying what we're all thinking.
It's also, the celebrity that they got to be in that is, what's his face, Harlan...
Ellison?
Williams? Is it Harlan...
The Harlan Globetrotters?
Yeah, the Harlan Globetrotters. You know who I mean. He's that comedian, Harlan something or other. And he was in, like, that movie where he goes to space and farts in his spacesuit, and that's a big deal. It was definitely Harlan Williams.
Yeah, I don't even know who that is, and I don't care.
Oh, you'd know him if you saw him. He's a sort of emo Phillips style of delivering lines. Anyway, yeah, the I'm in an ape suit, I don't give a fuck, a masterpiece. I'm sure the rest of the movie's no good, but anyway, let's keep going. Me and that Rory fellow were summoned to discuss freaking. That's correct, yeah. We wanted to know what if freaking is
still a thing
the
kids
do. That's still a thing the kids do, because in the 90s, back when we were coming up, that was the girls rubbing their butts on you dance craze.
Yeah.
As a pretty crazed person, when hanging out with my local entourage of colorful queers, I often find myself grinding. Okay, that was the thing back then, too, but it was different. That was the girl, like, or I guess if it's queers, because I'll be honest with you here, I appreciate how early you came out, Devlin. I was like 22 when I did. But moving on, when I was a teenager, that was girls kind of riding your leg like it was a saddle. That was the difference between grinding and freaking. Hey, you went to an all-boys high school.
Yeah, I was about to say, man, I don't know from grinding or freaking. You don't know where I've been.
I kind of do. I just can't imagine it.
The horrors I've seen.
I often find myself grinding. So sadly, this freaking business is a long-lost relic of the 90s. Anyway, I suppose while I'm here, I can ask a question. You can, but first, thanks for answering ours.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear that freaking has died. And you know what, though? It might not have died. Gay people are, like, 100% cooler than straight people, so they're the first to abandon shitty words.
Yeah.
So maybe they just have a better word for it. Anyway, what was the worst song based on a dance to come out of the 90s? Like the Whip Whip Nay Nay equivalent.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be the Macarena, right?
Yeah, that's the obvious answer.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Macarena at least is a super easy dance.
Well, it was definitely a, like, this is made for people at weddings type thing. Yeah. This is like a chicken dance level quality.
I'll tell you the one that I hated the most, because it actually always had, we always had to fucking line up and do it when I was in high school at dance. The electric slide.
Okay.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was some annoying bullshit, and I never figured it out. I never knew what the moves were. At least with the Macarena, I remember it's hand, up hand, cross, cross, head, butt, shake. That much I remember.
Yeah.
But the electric slide was like four different sets of moves that you do while walking kind of it was like line dancing.
Yeah. That's basically all that was. And there are a few different versions of that.
Yeah.
And even then, they'll give you like the shout outs for like, all right, go two steps to the left. Now forward. And you're like, okay, I get it. You're basically just line dancing, but you want it to sound hip.
Yeah. I mean, if I can tell you from personal experience, the worst thing to come out of the 90s for dancing for me
was Bye Bye Bye.
Oh,
because
no.
That little hand thing with like, bye, bye, bye. I don't know why that annoyed me so much, but it did.
How much about the hand jiving for Too Legit to Quit?
Oh, that was great.
Too Legit. No, but for me, it was swing dancing, because I got big into swing dancing. I had a friend dance partner, and I got used to flipping her up over my shoulders and tossing her between my legs a bunch of times and doing all these complicated lindies and steps and stuff, because I got really into it during that, like, 10-minute period where swing dancing came back.
Yep.
It caught me good.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the thing. I can still fucking swing dance, and I should not be able to.
And you should not do it, for probably your old man hip would break.
That's true. That's a thing, Devlin. That's a real thing. For a brief period of the 90s, everyone was swing dancing like the 40s.
Yeah.
You probably don't believe me, but just look up some songs from the time period. Check out Zoot Suit Riot by whoever, that Cherry Pop and Daddies.
Yep.
There you go. You get a sense of how annoying that would have been. Thank you. Next question from the Dire Leprechaun. Hey, guys. Heard you first on Critical Success with James D'Amato a couple months ago. That's an episode we did with our friend James from the One Shot and the Campaign series.
Yep.
We did a little interview on his show. He's been on ours, too, so when you get caught up on your afterthoughts, you'll eventually run into him. And since then, I've caught up on System Mastery and Afterthought Archives. I have a question for you two. If you were to become a lycanthrope hybrid of any creature, what would you choose?
Okay, so because we're going lycanthrope, I assume that means half man, half whatever.
Well, I'm going to say you get the D&D lycanthrope rules. You can turn into a beast version of the animal, like a werewolf, and a wolf.
Okay, so are we going to go with World of Darkness werewolf rules, where I have, like, wolf, halfway between wolf and man, full wolf and man, halfway between wolf, man, and then man?
Any three.
Great. Okay.
You get any three. You get more man than regular man.
Yeah, well, the best part was the halfway between werewolf and man was just very hairy just guy.
Hairy guy? Is that looks full from the...
it's straight up just the bio-E section of Palladium.
When you buy the looks full in TMNT and other strangeness. Yeah, okay. Yeah. You get any three. Go ahead. What's your animal, though?
Okay, so if I can lycanthrope and get an animal, I'm probably going to go with something useful. Because, I mean, if you turn into a werewolf, you're mostly just good at killing guys.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to get something, like, cool and interesting.
Well, I'd go straight up for a bird of some kind, because that...
Oh, yeah, that gives you flight.
That gives you... opens up your mobility options like
crazy.
Well,
unless you're just like, oh, I turned into a giant bird, but I can't actually fly because I'm half man and I can't support my weight.
Why did I choose were-cassowary?
Oh, because I wanted to murder everyone.
Yeah, I wanted to kick people to death in a crazy way.
Oh my god, I kind of want to change mine to were-cassowary now. Just be the most frightening thing ever.
Your arms just keep getting shorter. Your midway there form is straight up a T-Rex. Half man, half cassowary, all T-Rex.
So I think I would probably go with, I want to say, like, kangaroo.
Okay.
I'd have a rad pouch I could carry things in. I'd have awesome jumping skills. I would be buff as hell.
Yeah, those things are jacked.
Oh, yeah. Kangaroos are ripped as fuck.
It's ridiculous how yoked they are. Also, as a half-man, half-kangaroo, you'd have companionship in the form of iced tea.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that. Oh, Lord. Why did I forget Tank Girl?
I didn't forget Tank Girl. The moment you said that, I was lining up the Tank Girl joke.
Oh, Jesus, I just set that one up for you. Thanks God I did that. Okay. But yeah, no, there you go. I'll just be from the world of Tank Girl then.
And I'm going to pick Hummingbird.
Great, so you just get real tiny?
Yeah, I get increasingly small, so my half-man, half-hummingbird form is like maybe 3 feet off the ground or something. But I can fucking fly backwards and upside down and shit. I am rad as hell. I can get anywhere by flying there. Also, I get to go super tiny. I can get into places.
Well, you don't get to go super tiny. You're half man still.
No.
It's like werewolf. You don't become wolf size, you piece of shit.
We established it's any three of the core werewolf changing abilities. So I can become half man, half hummingbird, and a hummingbird.
Great.
Yeah, you can straight up turn into a kangaroo if you want, if you give a fuck.
if one were to give fucks.
I guess if you want to rig a boxing match or something in the 1920s.
Hell yeah.
Then sure. I feel like I made the smart deal here.
Yeah, if I want to fight Bugs Bunny, then yeah, sure.
Sylvester the cat has no idea what's coming to him. It's just a mouse, Dad. Anyway, yeah, so there you go. Hummingbird and kangaroo are the answers that we have chosen for your excellent question. Thank you so much, the Dire Leprechaun. Next question from Ted Cheddar. What's up with old D&D pole arms? There's way too many of them, and it doesn't make any sense for why. It's because of obsessive listing that nerds do.
Yeah, well, it got to the point where someone went, oh, well, you know, this pole arm was mainly used to do this, and this one was mainly used to do that. And they go, oh, well, let's give them different stats. You go, well, if you've already used these two, you know that there was this one, and then they just spiral out of control.
The neat thing about all those stupid pole arms that are listed in, like, the second edition D&D, they're all real. Like, those are all real. Like, studded leather armor, that never existed.
No.
That's not a thing. Boiled leather armor, sure, that existed, but studded leather armor, it was a mistake that they misread how armor is built and came up with a whole new armor category.
Oh, yeah.
But
all it's the brontosaurus of armor.
Yeah, but all those pole arms are real. They just made constant pole arms. The reason that there are so many pole arms is because it's real easy to teach peasants to fight with them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're already using farming implements and shit like that, you're like, okay, something on the end of a stick. I get it. I understand how this works.
Yeah, and also you can put a bunch of guys in a line with something long on the end of a stick, and they can kill stuff from like 6 feet away, and they feel safer and they're less likely to retreat.
Yep.
So that's why there are so many pole arms, is because there are so many peasants that need to be armed.
Fucking peasants.
They just need so many fucking weapons. Just God. Get your shit together and grow me some potatoes already.
Jeez.
Ugh. I love that. I love that about people who think that they are reincarnated from, like, the Middle Ages. They're never peasants.
No. Everyone is always Marie Antoinette or Abraham Lincoln or something like that. No one's ever like, oh, I was some little dumb idiot who lived in France and I subsistence farmed and then I died of cholera.
I died at 28 from a hole in my tooth. I died the way a horse would die, by touching a red plant.
I saw some ants, got scared, and ran into a lake.
Horses. Anything will kill them. Okay, on that note, what's the dumbest weapon you've seen in an RPG?
Dumbest weapon in an RPG?
I'm going to go with the god-kicking boot from Exalted.
That is a good choice.
Yeah, I'm going
to... It's just the steel-toed boot that is bigger.
Yeah, the god-kicking boot from Exalted is a boot that you use to kick dudes. It's not bladed or anything. It's just a heavy boot. The reason it's so crazy dangerous compared to just a regular heavy boot is because it's made of magic metal.
Yeah, it is basically a steel-toed boot, except it's soul steel.
Yeah, it's better metal, which is funny because it's like, if you hit someone with a rock, it doesn't matter if that rock was expensive. You know? All that matters is that it was heavy. So it's funny to me that it exists at all, and I love the idea of a guy wandering around with one super heavy boot because he's like, this is magically good at kicking. It's so heavy.
Usually for me, the dumbest weapons I see in an RPG are the ones that you aren't allowed to have as a PC, because it's the named ones that are like, what is this? This is an earth-shattering weapon that was wielded by the gods, and it's said that you could cut a mountain in twain with it, and then it just has an entire sidebar of, the DM should not allow any PC to see this. If this comes into your campaign, it should be a major plot point, but don't give it to anyone. I'm like, don't fucking give it stats then.
Do you think this is a great chance for us to take some more sidewise pot shots at fucking Stormbringer?
Yes, don't fucking put an artifact weapon that's like, what does this do? Well, normally a person has an 80% chance to hit, and this gives you plus 800%. Well, fucking whoop-de-doo.
Yeah, fucking Stormbringer, piece of shit sword from what I assume is probably an okay book series, but we'll never know.
No, don't put in weapons that are supposed to be for, like, the gods or for NPCs or anything and give them stats. Same thing with gods. Don't put a god in your book and give them stats unless you want a PC to kill them.
This is reminding me of how in Rifts there is the greater rune weapon series of weapons that, like, drink souls and so on.
Yep.
But they never bothered creating lesser rune weapons. Anyway, great questions. Thank you very much, Ted Cheddar. Next questions come to us from a Mr. Jones. And Mr. Jones and me would like you to answer these questions to the best of your ability.
Well, you know, me and Mr. Jones, we got a thing going on.
Oh, well, you see, Mr. Jones and me, we stay up telling each other fairy tales. And then we look at the beautiful women.
Songs.
Different songs. There are many of them. Anyway, answer these questions to the best of your ability. This message will self-destruct in 24 hours. We got this question like 2 weeks ago. The Eagle Flies at Midnight. Which Don Bluth movie would make the best RPG? I mean, come on. Bakshi got an RPG. It's true. He shouldn't have, and he did.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
So which Don Bluth movie would make the best RPG?
Well, I'm pretty sure one would give you The Greatest Adventure.
I can't wait to tell you that that was Ralph Bakshi.
I know.
Oh, God. No. Okay, so we're going to have to talk between...
Nim?
Oh, yeah, Secrets of Nim, or is it called Secret of Nim? It is. It's called Secret of Nim.
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of, like, whatever the actual name of the book was. And then, okay, so Nim would be a really good one.
The dragon one?
Oh, shit, God, the Age of Dragons or something. I just remember that exists now. Flight of Dragons.
Flight of Dragons.
Flight of Dragons would be a really good one, playing as a dragon, or a human who gets turned into a dragon, and those are your two core character classes.
Yeah.
I would also like to see an All Dogs Go to Heaven game where you play as angel dogs who have to rescue dogs from like, evil bulldogs.
Evil devil dogs.
Yeah. Or you get to play as an orphan.
That's your class.
Orphan.
Dead dog or orphan. Welcome to the depressing RPG.
Your two classes are dead dog and orphan. But no, All Dogs Go to Heaven where you play as a dog who has died and goes back to help people on Earth would be a pretty good one.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm starting to run out of Don Bluth movies. I know there's still American Tail in there.
Yeah, which would be not very good.
No.
Because it'd just be like, what do you play as? Jews?
Jews. Jew mice.
Yeah, you're just Jew mice.
Or cowboy dogs.
Jew mice and cowboy dogs. That's way better than Dead Dogs and Orphans. Although, Dead Dogs and Orphans, great name for an RPG.
Oh, man, that should totally be on the Black Dog line from White Wolf, right? Fucking Dead Dogs and Orphans. And it's the name of just a fucking grim book about someplace vampires can go.
Yeah, it's just a werewolf supplement. Dead Dogs and Orphans.
You could
rage across the orphanage.
You could go here and have sex in this place when you LARP this game. There's dead dogs and orphans everywhere.
You can fuck on a pile of orphans.
Unlike the dogs, the orphans are alive.
Oh, God.
All right. What is the objectively best monster Godzilla has fought?
The Smog Monster.
You like the Smog Monster? That's good. I'm going to go with the American Godzilla, because he fought him in that Godzilla Final Wars and just beat the shit out of it. The Noah Emmerich fucking... Yeah, the 1998 Godzilla got its shit kicked in by a regular Toei Godzilla. That was awesome.
I also like him fighting just a flying saucer. That's fun.
That is great. I enjoyed that, too. I also like the three-headed dragons.
Yeah.
Whether Mecha or otherwise. I think it's called Ghidorah.
Yeah. Ghidorah's great.
Yeah.
He never really fought Mothra. Mothra just sort of helped him.
He fought Mothra.
Mothra.
They're like superheroes. They have to fight to establish their bona fides.
Their dominance.
They always pop in like, oh, I'm Captain America. I'm Wolverine. We have to stop fucking Doctor Doom. Let's fight first. That's a normal thing. And you know, that's a rule that Godzilla follows.
Yeah. If there's some other monster, I gotta fight that monster until I realize I need to fight a different monster.
The shit is that, a jet jaguar? I'll fight a jet jaguar. Alright, so, why does Hennet of 3.5 D&D, also 3rd edition regular D&D, I mean, Hennet was around.
Yeah.
The only new character they added to 3.5 was Gimbal, the gnome bard. Anyway, why does Hennet of 3.5 have pants made of belts? All right, let's be clear. First of all, he has one pant made of belts, and then a corset made of belts.
Pant made of belt.
Yeah, the other half is regular puffy pant. He is like half genie, half the crow. And honestly, it's because fucking sorcerers, iconic sorcerers across game lines, cannot get their pant shit together.
Get your pants game together.
Check out the fucking sorcerer from Pathfinder, and you see if I'm wrong. I mean, she's wearing like little secondary stirrup pants underneath her regular pants. I don't remember her name. She's that red lady. She's got the red outfit on, and she's got, like, stirrup pants that start at her ankles. Get your pants shit together, sorcerers.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with sorcerers and pants, but apparently having phenomenal cosmic power that you inherit instead of learn makes you be like, you know what sucks? Regular pants.
All belts. That's my pants situation.
That's what I'm doing from now on. Woke up in the morning, found some belts, good enough for me.
Let me tell you something here, Mr. Jones. I will tell you the truth. I once counted, before your question, because we do not do research, before your question, I once counted the number of buckles I could see on Hennet, or could guesstimate that were probably behind a section of Hennet. He has 37 buckles to do in the morning.
37 buckles.
That's too many buckles.
That's quite a few too many buckles.
I'm not wearing a belt right now, because I'm too lazy for one buckle.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even pilgrim-level buckles is like 4.
Yeah, and I don't even think you had to redo the hat buckle. I think that's just a decorative buckle.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you did, at the end of the day, you want to let loose, but you still want to be formal, and you just undo that hat buckle a little.
Oh, that feels so good.
You just let that head fat expand out a little, out your hat buckle. Oh, that's a good feeling. It just
froze up a little. Oh, it's good stuff.
Oh, man, you eat too much, and then you're like, oh, and you undo your belt, and then you undo the buckles on your shoes. Yeah.
That's good times. And then he finishes with saying, the Sparrowhawk caws when the owl shuts up, because he's doing spy stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, the owls are not what they seem.
Yeah. The Viking sheep dines on olives, wine, and cheese.
This wizard knows why I'm here.
All right. Hey, guys. I wanted to share my pet peeve in gaming, and this is from Greg H. which is the setting being baked into the system. An example of this is Feng Shui, where the default setting permeates the book so thoroughly, in order to have a homebrew setting, I had to type out a condensed version of the core mechanics to streamline gameplay for my group. I'm not knocking Feng Shui, in fact, it's the game that turned us on to system-like games. I simply prefer to have the default setting be relegated to the back of the book for those who are interested. Okay, that's fair enough. That's because we talked about our pet peeves in gaming recently. Since this is for Afterthought, I'll ask some inane questions. What do you cook when you're feeling lazy? John, when do you not feel lazy?
Never. Okay. So, frozen pizza.
Yeah.
And if I'm lazier than that, which I often am, and for a good week I did this for dinner, and I am loathe to mention this to the people.
I'm gonna guess it's unthawed frozen pizza.
No.
Oh.
Oh. My dinner for about a week was I bought a loaf of French bread and one of those things of mozzarella. I would just grab a yank of bread, a hunk of mozzarella, and bite in between the two of them. Take a bite of bread, take a bite of mozzarella. Take a bite of bread, take a bite of mozzarella.
You needed some fruit to complete the Lord of the Rings breakfast right there.
Yeah.
That's what a hank of bread and a chunk of cheese and like some grapes is Lord of the Rings breakfast.
Yeah, no, I was having adventurer's breakfast. This was just like, I walk downstairs in the tavern. They have bread and cheese available for you. And I'm like, okay, great. That's what I'm having for dinner.
Fair enough. Let's see. When I'm feeling lazy, I usually go for tacos because I'm as lazy as John is, but I'm a cook. So, I like to cook a lot more than he does. So, I like to make a simple taco when I'm super feeling lazy.
Also, you actually have stuff in your kitchen where I do not.
That's also true. Although, you're too lazy to get stuff for your kitchen. So, this is not a situation that will resolve itself.
It's true.
Anyway, so there you go. I like to make tacos or spaghetti when I'm feeling super lazy. What is the superior cocktail made with orange juice and grenadine? I think we can answer this one on the count of three, right, John?
Yeah.
One, two, three.
Orange Venetian juice and grenadine.
I'm sorry, you're so lazy, I had no idea how lazy. It's the Venetian sunrise.
No, it's 100% the Venetian sunrise, available from Olive Garden.
The only reason to go into an Olive Garden, because Olive Garden used to be your source for cheap noodles.
Yeah, but now it's just a fine dining experience.
It's
with
so expensive now.
Way too much to pay, but it has a great froofy little drink.
It's the drink that makes a man gay. It's so good.
Oh, it's delicious, and I love every second of it.
It might actually be called a Venetian sunset. I'm not sure which one.
It's a Venetian sunrise, sunset.
It's one or the other. It doesn't matter. It's really good. That's the trick. You put enough coconut in anything, and it's going to be pretty tasty. So, let's move on here. Where's the next one? What did you think of Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens?
Pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I liked it. I usually hate movies. I did not hate it. There were, if you had to render complaints against it, it's not that hard. It's very Star Wars-y.
Yeah, it's very reference-y.
Yeah.
So, meh.
To the point where I didn't feel like Star Wars needed to lampshade other Star Wars. The point where Han Solo was like, yeah, we always have to fight a big thing at the end of these. It was kind of funny to me. There's some weak point, whatever. But I'll be honest with you, I loved Adam Driver's character, I loved Finn, I loved just about all the new characters they introduced. I had an immediate gay crush on Poe Dameron, I'll tell you that right now.
You and the internet.
Yeah, it's not just me, so I'm looking forward to what they do with him.
Yep, there you go.
There you go, we liked it a lot. What color lightsaber would you wield? Would it be a standard lightsaber design, and what alignment would you have between Jedi Sith or Grey Jedi?
Well, I would definitely be a Grey Jedi. I would walk the path between light and dark using dark powers without falling to the dark. And I would most likely be using a yellow lightsaber as I'm more diplomatic than an actual knight.
Wow.
Fucking suck a dick!
How much KOTOR did you play?
Too much KOTOR. That is the answer.
Too much KOTOR. I've always been a fan of that light staff thing that Darth Maul had. I'm kind of hoping that those show up again in Force Awakens.
The Fourth Awakens.
The Fourth Awakens. It
felt you're, good.
You're Thor? Well, it hurts. I liked that light staff thing. If there's anything they're going to pull from the original, from the prequels, it should be that cool light staff thing and give one to Rey.
There you go.
I think that'd be neat. So I'd probably want one of those. And color-wise, I don't think there's been enough purple lightsabers in the galaxy. That's my favorite color. So I'll go with a purple Force staff.
Great.
That's my lightsaber of choice. All right, if you were going to have any ring from fiction as your wedding band, what would it be? It retains any special powers or properties that it would have had in the film.
All right. Or what do you have?
Shit, I don't know.
Anything from fiction.
Rings are complicated.
Well, usually rings come with sort of a trap on them when they're magic rings.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem, is you don't really... A lot of the magic rings you just don't want.
No, it's like you immediately jump to the one ring and you're like, oh, wait, no, that would be terrible.
I'll take Fezziwig's ring with Iocane powder in it.
All right.
Yep, I'm going to take a ring full of poison powder that won't kill fucking Wesley, but it'll get anyone else.
Great.
Yeah, and that I don't really want a magic ring because they almost always have a trap built in. And that's a nice, simple one. John?
I'm going to go with the Green Lantern ring.
Oh, shit. Look at you.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good call. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I probably shouldn't go with the Green Lantern ring because I do not have willpower at all. I would put that shit on and be like, come on. Constructs.
Well, let's see. Are you
I get a little green fart cloud and that would be about it. I'd be like,
well, that's the thing, though, nowadays, John, is that there's like 8 colors to choose from in your lantern.
Oh, yeah. I could probably get a good amount of the, lavender or some shit. I could do love.
That's love. There's also a hope ring.
I could do the blue hope.
Yeah.
I could do yellow for fear.
Could you get the greed?
For greed?
Oh, you're not greedy. You're like weirdly non-greedy.
It's true. I really don't care about any possessions.
Yeah, so you wouldn't be able to power Larfleeze's ring either. You pretty much have to go with blue or red.
No, I couldn't do red. I don't give a fuck about anger.
You don't get angry? All right, fair enough. Well, anyway, a lantern ring is a great choice.
Yeah, so there you go. I'll get the purple lantern ring.
Nice. So there we go. Thank you very much for the questions. Greg H., next question. Dear Hombres du Fromage, thanks for your help getting the word... Oh, I remember this. Thank you for getting your help getting the word out about my panty game, Panties of Legend. This guy wrote a game based on our review of that game, Panty Explosion, because it was disappointingly not about panties.
Yeah.
So he fixed that, and he wrote a game called Panties of Legend. It's now finished and available for free, although I double dog dare your listeners to find a group for it, I sure can't. Fair enough, folks. Try and find people to play Panties of Legend with you. Here's the link if you'll do me the honor of putting my verbal macaroni on the fridge.
There you go.
We will. By the time this episode comes out, that'll be on the fridge. You can go and get a free role-playing game from listener Chris, who wanted to take the terrible panty explosion game and turn it into a new game that is actually about panties.
Into a new, differently terrible game.
Who knows? I haven't read it yet. Thanks again for both the signal boost and the inspiration in your surprisingly insightful review of Panty Explosion, Chris.
Yeah, well, whenever we're insightful, it is pretty much just weird.
I feel like anyone who read that book would have the same review of it, which is, wait, I thought this was about panties. Also, this is still terrible, even without being about panties.
You call this Panty Explosion, and yet...
You found a whole different way to be boring.
God damn you.
That's another great example of the DM has, or the author of the book has a one weird thing problem.
Yes.
Just like we have with Brontosaurus Explosion or whatever it was called.
Boy, I sure do love Japanese culture.
Yeah, just love Japanese schoolgirls, but not comedy ones from like TV shows, real ones.
For realsies, actual Japan.
Yeah, ugh. Hey guys, love the show. Just a couple quick questions. How long will it take before we see the Book of Erotic Fantasy, Forgotten Realms edition, now that Wizards of the Coast has opened up the license? All right, here's the problem. Book of Erotic Fantasy, Forgotten Realms edition already exists. It's playing like a movie on the back of Bruce Greenwood's eyelids every time he sleeps. It has been for 35 years.
Oh, that is so sadly accurate.
And should I write it? Yeah, well, you might as well. It's not like Bruce Greenwood's going to publish it. He's just going to keep lying in bed, masturbating to it, the way the Grandpa Wookiee jerks off to a movie in the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yeah. You know, that Grandpa, always jerking it.
Just sitting there.
You know, at least he's no Kabanka.
He's no Kabanka. Our made-up Wookiee who is not as smart as Chewbacca. That's a deep cut-in joke. Ham Jello and Kabanka are our dumb versions of Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Flying around in the decade pigeon.
Oh, deep. All right. I have questions for Afterthought. Would you guys invest in my weed and food truck tandem business? It's a two-bus system. The legal cannabis dispensary goes first and is called the Cannabis. And the second is called Munchies and trails after, collecting what cash remains on the shambling victims of the first and dispensing tacos of surprisingly high quality.
You know, there actually was a place in Florida where I lived called Munchies, and they did delivery from 10 until 4 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their whole deal. And it was all just like, what do you have on the menu? Oh, it's like weird things like beef jerky inside of macaroni and just like crazy dumb bullshit. You get a lot of, like, Doritos and, like, Snickers inside of them. It was just crazy nonsense.
My only story about Munchies, I once met a roadie named that.
a roadie named Munchies.
Yeah. No, good. Just Munchie.
Aces.
Anyway, despite our routine jokes about blazing it and every day and smoke trees and what have you, neither of us really smoke weed.
No. We consume it.
Edibles. Edibles only.
Please.
Come back to us.
Give me a snickerdoodle.
Come back to me when it's a taco that's full of weed.
Yeah, instead of the cilantro on there, just put some weed.
Yeah, let's make this a one-bus system where you get high off tacos.
Oh my god, and sold. 100%.
That's it, that gets you the Dragon's Den right there.
Yeah.
Or the Shark Tank or whatever the fuck show.
You call it El Cannabus, and you go around, you sell weed tacos, fucking make the tortillas with weed.
There you go.
You know how you have those green tortillas?
Yeah.
And it's normally like the, oh, we made it with vegetables?
It's got spinach in it.
Oh, fuck that. You make it with weed, then you use that for your actual taco.
Oh, that's your shell. And then you add some green weed sauce, salsa verde.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens. So, El Cannabus. Let's get that going. You and us, Ben B.
You and me, Ben B, taking on the world.
We'll show them all.
They'll never see it coming.
I'll make the bus so we can ride across the oceans.
Ah, we'll be big, huge, the biggest.
When we get to South America, we'll just stop. And there we'll live our lives.
And from there, we shall be kings.
All right, so there you go. That's about an hour of questions, which is convenient because we're out of questions.
Yay! We love your questions. Please send us more questions.
Yeah, we're actually out, so by all means, send us way more questions, and we'll just keep answering them. Nothing can stop us.
Well, I could stop you.
No, death could stop us.
Yes, that's
honestly
how I will stop you.
My computer broke today.
Oh, yeah.
That will stop us from doing things. In fact, no movie mastery this week, everybody. We're really sorry, but I had to use a borrowed computer to make this episode, and we just... Until I get my...
Unfortunately, we had already recorded about 40 minutes of movie mastery when the computer exploded.
Yeah, this is sad times. Anyway, letting you know, and thanks so much for listening. As always, this has been Afterthought. If you want more Afterthought, you can find it at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, where you can also find our regular show System Mastery, our Movie Mastery, where we review movies, or at least we used to. And if you like any of that stuff, you can support us on Patreon. If you support us at any level on Patreon, you get our bonus content, which is more System Mastery stuff. So by all means, support us on Patreon. Get the extra episodes.
It is so good. The last few bonus ones, we put out the Gamma World one for free.
Yeah.
But the past few ones, I think, have been a delight.
They've been really fun to make, too. So definitely check that out. Otherwise, follow us on Twitter and Facebook or email us at systemmastery@gmail.com. Any kind of social media, you can find us there. Send us your movie recommendations and your questions for Afterthought, the books you think we should be reading. Just keep it all coming in. Thanks so much for listening, and as always, have a great week.